This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
I assume that we are live. Before we get into this one, as always, please get involved by liking, sharing, subscribing and commenting. 7,000 listeners joined our fans phone in Twitter space yesterday. Oh, that feels like a lifetime ago, doesn't it? And although I'm not expecting anywhere near that figure tonight, I still find it absolutely mad that people enjoy our live content this much. So as I say, share away, give it a like, comment, subscriptions are always appreciated. Hello and welcome back to yet another live emergency green and white podcast brought to you by Argyle Life. Ian Foster has been sacked as the head coach of Plymouth Argyle Football Club after 87 days at the helm. Although it was April Fool's, this is no joke. Oh God, that was bad. Not only did we lose a head coach, but a board member and a game of football on the same day. Sort of. Joining on the 5th of January from El Etifak, where he worked as Steven Gerrard's number two, an unbeaten start saw Foster in the running for manager of the month, but it's been all downhill since then. 17 games saw four wins, coming against mighty sides like Sutton United, Cardiff, Swansea and Middlesbrough. Four draws and nine defeats. Fortress Home Park has waited 474 minutes for a goal, and we believe that's the first time ever the club has lost five straight home games to nil. On the road, there's been some positives. We can't dismiss that euphoria of the first away win at Swansea or the topless man boob jiggles away to Middlesbrough. However, this feels like the best outcome for all involved. Plymouth Argyle stride into the final six games of their relegation battle with renewed confidence in the fan base, or at least we hope. Rotherham on Friday is absolutely massive and we'll be there yet again in our numbers. Joining me for the first round, there's quite a few people on tonight. I'll just go in clockwise order. Adam, how's things?
Yeah, good, thank you. As I said just before, I think I've had a slightly less busy day than yourself. I've appeared on no media before this. So yeah, pretty quiet on my end, but all is good.
I just realised that my microphone wasn't plugged in. So this is going really well. Ben, how's things?
Yeah, good, thanks, mate. I was hot tub happy yesterday, a little bit more subdued today on reflection. But I think, as we'll probably discuss, it's a good move for the club. So definitely feeling more upbeat today than I was at around 5 o'clock yesterday.
Yeah, talking of hot tubs, I was enjoying myself until I was getting pings of rumours and that there was a statement imminent from different in-the-know sources on Twitter, and I had to rush out of the jacuzzi and get changed for a pod that didn't happen because the club decided to drop the announcement at silly o'clock at night. And Graham, how's things?
reflective, right decision. And I've been busy on Pasotti in the meantime, trying to defend decisions. There are one or two who thought it was the wrong decision, but surely it was the right decision.
Well, That's it. When I messaged you and asked you if you were coming on, you said you had a lot to say. Do you want to go first? Do you want to give us your initial thoughts and feelings?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I feel really sorry for Simon Hallett and Jane. I mean, they went through a proper recruitment process. Obviously, we're impressed with Ian Foster at the interview. He started off really well, and then something happened. I mean, what it was, I don't know. We had a succession of games, sort of Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday, Wednesday. Terrible weather, and I just don't think he was able to get his ideas across to the players. I was alarmed when Adam Randall started talking about walkthroughs, and other team members in interviews talked about the intensity and the amount of information you've got to get on board. And players just can't do that with match days coming rapidly. And there was perhaps there's a loss of confidence, a lack of belief. Something happened in February and it didn't get better. And the results didn't get better. And it was a slippery slope. But no manager can survive five consecutive home game defeats with no goals and virtually no shots on target. No manager, no matter how revered. So it was inevitable. Personally, I think it should have been after the Preston game with the international break to regroup. But he was very insular, and I do blame the club for this. He never got a chance to speak to the fans. There was no meet the manager. There was no. The first interview we had with him was a sort of in a darkened room, and he looked vaguely sinister. Mm. And there was nothing since. I had no idea what his football philosophy was, and no idea what he was like as a person. All we got was the extended press conferences, which, you know, you're under duress. You're answering questions and difficult questions at that. You're never going to be at your best. Occasionally he smiled and occasionally a bit of humour, but then his demeanour on the touchline, hands in pockets, you know, all the rest of it. It just didn't add up to somebody who was going to inspire the players, let alone the fans, to secure our survival in the championship. So it was inevitable. I wish him well, wish him and his family well. They made a big move coming from Saudi to wet and dreary Plymouth. But, yeah, I'm sure he'll get another job somewhere else, but it won't be as a manager.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying about that. There just never really felt like any connection. It felt like there was never really any attempt to make a connection. Ben, we've skipped ahead a bit, but before we get onto the crux of the sacking or the dismissal or the departure or whatever you want to call it, is there anything specific we need to talk about, the loss from Bristol City, or is that it? Can we just write that off and we just pretend that didn't happen and go again?
I think, ironically, just mentioning briefly, seems it's not going to continue. It doesn't need too much coverage. But the games against Bristol City and Norwich, in a way, seeing the team, the system work to a reasonable degree, was actually more of an indictment on the way the team was set up to play than when we were just abjectly horrible. Because there were times in both those games where we were moving between the lines, we were doing the things that Foster was clearly trying to get us to do. And yet in both games, we really didn't create a lot of chances. And as I sort of said on the previous pod, that the damning indictment is we're expected to score off of an average of 3.5 shots on target per game and then keep teams out. And it's just not realistic when your squad is in sum total one of the, you know, the worst is not a nice adjective to use, but we're certainly not in the most powerful squads in the league. That's not a methodology that's going to work with that group of players. You're better off to do as kamikaze as it was, what Schumacher sort of did. It's actually more pragmatic to try and score as many as possible and just hope that you happen to be on the right side of the odd number, perhaps, than it is realistic to sort of play the way we were. So ironically, I think, the Bristol City game, we started well for 20 minutes, didn't get any clear-cut opportunities, really. The opposition manager made adjustments and Ian Foster wasn't able, for the entire second half, wasn't really able to make any in-game adjustments and showed an inflexibility, despite the fact that he had sort of adopted, he'd finally, let go of the back three and adopted a different formation. still showed an inability to respond in game that had been present throughout his tenure, his short tenure. And I think that, you know, when you have no flexibility either before, between games and during games, you're just not cut out to manage in this league, which is, you know, let's be honest, it's a very competitive. It's one of the top leagues in the world. It's, you know, and we understand the club need to do things differently, but you know, it was always a gamble. Some people can come in into their first job and prove themselves sort of quite, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Mercurial is not the word I'm looking for, but some people can just land and be prodigious, can't they? And just, you know, take up the reins like they've always been there. And some people it's not going to work for. And just for him, it was too much at one time. And I've got a lot of empathy because it was a very difficult situation. But I think Bristol City, ironically, even though, you could say it was one of the better performances, that's a damning indictment when you lose 1-0 at home and don't really create much.
Yeah, Adam, we'll move away from the Bristol City game in a minute, but obviously in the international break, you joined Ben, who's beneath you currently, James and Alberto on that Stats deep dive pod. You know, just forgetting the eye test for a minute or two. Were there any statistical positives from the following two games to suggest that there was any upturn on the horizon, or was it just more of the same? And
for me, not from the Bristol City game, for sure. I mean, there was a lot of talk about the first 20 minutes being at least a little better, which, to be fair, they were. But as Ben said, that we didn't create any clear-cut chances. We didn't, you know, have any reasonable opportunity of putting the ball in there. As far as I could see it, we won a few corners, did nothing, and let our opposition get on top in the game again. So, yeah, I mean, looking at it, when we went 1-0 down, we were on, I think, 0.3 XG in the game, which is nothing new. That sort of thing happened throughout Foster's reign. And when you're going in, you're expecting to put oppositions under pressure with those sorts of numbers on a consistent basis, you're just not going to do it. So, I know, maybe you could look at the Norwich game and say we did have a few more clear-cut chances, but also so did they. And it could very easily have put the ball in the net from a number of their set-piece situations before they eventually did, twice. So, I mean, there's an argument, I guess, and I'd be keen to, I don't know if you're watching, Alberto, and hello if you are, but I'd be keen to see that chart again just to see if there's been any little bit of movement on Foster's greens and whether they got closer to that line that, you know, would perhaps have seen us go safe. My suspicion is probably not. And yeah, regardless, I know we're going to come on to it, and it's the main thing here, but a lot of that made the sacking both necessary and inevitable.
Yeah, what did you make of the sacking then whilst you're unmuted?
I mean, yeah, it's, as I say, and I've said it before, my overriding feeling, possibly surprising, is one of sadness, and not at the sacking itself, I should say. Like, the sacking itself was completely justified and needed to happen, and frankly should have happened a fortnight ago. The thing for me is that we all really wanted this to work, and for a little while it looked like it might. You know, we were in a situation after Schumacher, and we'd had 5 years since the, well, it would have been 4 years then, since the appointment of Ryan Lowe and Schumacher after him, that were objectively an excellent time. And when Foster came in, okay, came in as a little bit of an unknown, and he came in and he had those few good performances at the start, and you thought, have we really pulled a rabbit out of the hat here? Are we really going to start on that run again? And it just didn't happen. I think, Graham, as you said, something changed. What was it? My suspicion is, as with many, that he lost the players, which is kind of a sign of what we've been saying all along, that he's not cut out to be a manager. And when that happens, and when you get the results like this, it kind of lends itself to the explanation of what everyone was thinking at the start, that we've basically gone out and appointed one of Neil Jusnik's mates, and he's come in and has not been good enough. Now, I don't know what's happened behind the scenes with the recruitment process, and I think, yeah, with Hallett and Parkinson involved, who we know have made good appointments in the past, then, you know, I have every reason to believe that recruitment process was thorough, but you've got to have a few doubts, particularly the way it's worked out like that. So, you know, I actually feel like I was more patient on Foster than quite a lot. It took me up until the Preston game before I finally turned and thought something had to be done. So for me, I'm glad something has been done. It's better late than never, but I'm glad something has been done whilst we're still in the fight. Because had Foster stayed, I imagine the fight would be over very quickly. We may even have nothing to play for on the final day because we're already down. So I'd like to think that won't happen anymore. It's a little bit late, but, you know, it's it had to be done. I am sad that it's not worked out, but it had to be done. And we've got six games now and a new era after that. And it can't be any less exciting than the last couple of months have been.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Gerald's comment there last longer than Liz Truss. We did debate in the content chat about whether we should have a Ian Foster versus a Lettuce, but he wouldn't have won. Ben, what are your initial thoughts then? Nice easy questions from me tonight. This is nice.
Yeah. Initial thoughts. When I said on the previous pod, I was lucky enough to be on the previous, that it might even have been if going after this game might have still been considered too late by a lot of the fans. Now, I think the reaction has been generally positive, and I think Rotherham perhaps was, you know, if it had lost Rotherham, then that maybe there would have been no forgiveness for the board. But I think the mass majority of fans have said, thank goodness it needed to happen. At least we have a fighting chance. But I really think this was the last plausible time that the decision could have been made. And, you know, for any, you know, statistical analysis that you want to do, an unprecedented run of form at home of losses like that is the only stat that I don't like being reductive, but that really is the only stat you need to look at. And it's not just our fans. It's not like we're in an echo chamber here. You know, I was lucky enough to go on during the international break, I went on a round table pod organized by the Wednesday week of the bottom eight teams in the league. And we all discussed each other's seasons, our predictions for the rest of the season, who would go down, etc. And out of this, there were six of us gave predictions and four of us suggested Argyle would go down. And at that point, we had points and or goal difference advantage on everyone else. And, you know, up until that point, up until Schumacher left, the worst sort of thing we had to deal with was people saying, oh, you were really good, the best team we've played all season. You're lucky to have not won, and there's no way you're going down. And then in the space of what at that point I think had been 12 games, Argyle were now looking to people like, you haven't got a clue. You've completely dropped off a cliff, and we think you're probably more likely to go down than us. And of course, a lot of fans are quite pessimistic when you're stuck in those sort of rot. You can imagine sort of Huddersfield fans and Wednesday fans and Birmingham fans not being particularly enamoured with the way their seasons have gone, and yet we were looking like the likely candidates. So it wasn't just, you know, I don't think we can be blamed as a fan base for being insular and a bit precious about sort of the style of football that we've become accustomed to. I think, you know, it was a real stark drop-off visible to everybody. So I think it needed to happen, and I think this was probably the very last viable opportunity for it to happen. That's not to say all of the problems were of Ian Foster's own making. You know, the lack of backroom staff being available, for example, if the club had arranged that Foster could bring in his staff as and when, was there a timetable established? Because then when backroom staff were quite clearly, or assistant coaches were quite clearly parachuted in, perhaps under the head of Foster and or others involved, you know, that kind of undermines him. There seems to have been quite a few things. And even like the international break could have been an opportunity for the manager to have been backed, and you could still have sacked him two games later. Like I think some people think that's would be almost fraudulent, but if you're a manager and you've got a player who's not playing well, and you say, look, I've got faith in him, I'm going to keep playing him, and you play him for two games and he's rubbish in those two games, and then you drop him, it's not considered that you've been lying. You put your faith in him, and he hasn't rewarded it as you wanted him to. You know, I don't think anyone would criticise a manager for doing that. And likewise, if the board say, look, we're backing Ian Foster in the international break, so we all shut up, or at least the negative drone that was present on social media, etc., or the speculation was at least deadened, they could still have given him just the two games that they've given him and then said, look, we had faith. It wasn't rewarded the way we'd hoped, and thank you and goodbye. And that wouldn't have come across, you know, as disingenuous, I don't think. So I think that, not that he'd been hung out to dry necessarily, but I do think there's some complicity in the problems and certainly some blame to go around elsewhere in the club than just to sit on the shoulders of Ian Foster. I think that There's some reputations been damaged around the club. Now, you know, people like Neil Dewsnip, for example, have an opportunity to literally put their hands to the wheel and maybe rescue some of their own personal reputations. But I think the fans have, you know, I don't think the fans in the club have ever been closer than they were during this summer, the start of this season. And that's very, very different now, I think. Not saying that, you know, the fans have turned or that, you know, that they don't like the chairman or the board or the staff. But I think this could be a very pivotal moment in the club's history. Yeah, I think that it's not all on Ian Foster, but 100% he needed to go now. But this was literally the last chance saloon, this Bristol City game. And some, you know, I don't think any of us would have been confident going to Rotherham against a team you match up against the style that Foster was playing and hope to get 3 points. And it's my personal belief, and has been for a long time, that if we don't get 3 points at Rotherham, then I don't think we stay up. So I think this had to be done now. This was the last point it could have been done. And thankfully, as harsh as that sounds on, you know, Ian Foster, it's good that it has happened.
Yeah, a couple of questions on the board then. Obviously, Graham, we touched on it off air. Obviously, Trevor East has decided to step down, personal reasons. Obviously, whatever's, you know, up, I hope, you know, he's okay. I hope his family are okay. But it seems that we've lost quite a, you know, a pivotal figure from the board who was very, you know, had very interesting contacts, very interesting history. I mean, you'll know more than I. But it just feels like a bit of a big loss, that one.
Yeah, I mean, he had a contact book that the envy of probably every other director in the country, I would imagine.
He managed to get us on Sky against Rotherham before we left.
I mean, just to be clear, he did announce it on Thursday before Friday. You know, there isn't a link between what's happening. And he says for personal reasons, and we've got to respect that. I know he really enjoyed being part of the club. He made Argyle TV what it is. And as you say, got us on Sky probably more times than we would have expected to have got. So money in the coffers. But I think he will be a big loss. A wise counsel in the boardroom, seeing it all, done it, been at the top table. It's a loss. But yeah, I just wish him well and hope the personal circumstances resolve themselves.
Yeah, we've got nearly 900 people in now. Get your comments, get your questions in the comments. We'll start some of those and we'll get round to those in a bit once mine have run out. Adam, we're talking about the board. What do you make of the board's decision not to pull the trigger before the international break? You know, as you've already mentioned, we did that stats deep dive, or you did. I sort of listened to it. I didn't really understand it. You know, the writing was basically on the wall. Nothing changed in those two games. This side of the international break, how come we didn't pull the trigger then?
No, and it's something that, if we get relegated very narrowly, we could perhaps come to regret the fact that we didn't make that move sooner. Had the club been able to pull together for these two games in the way that it wasn't able to, you know, there's every chance that we would have been able to pick up a couple of more points. That being said, you know, as much as I would have done that, as much as I would have been happy to pull the trigger straight before the international break and either get someone in or get everybody to rally round whichever coach or director of football was going to take over, I do accept the point from Ben that there's nothing wrong necessarily with trying to give your appointment the chance to work, and sacking him at this stage is at least a lot better than sacking him after the Rotherham game, which we absolutely do need to win. So it's not what I would have done. And as I've said in a couple of podcasts in the time since, coming out of the international break with Ian Foster still in charge was not the way that I wanted that international break to go. It was the worst thing about my international break, and I got to an England game 2 hours late because of a crash coach. So, you know, it was not pleasing. But we've come out the other side, and it's happened now. And I think that reassures me a bit, because one of the things that made me particularly angry, actually, through the way that this had been operated, and has certainly calmed me down for now, is the fact that we'd heard absolutely nothing from the board in the intervening time. And it it made me feel a lot more sorry for Foster more than anything, because he was forced to be the face of this, the face of what was happening. The director of football, chief executive, chairman, up until yesterday, nobody faced the supporters. Nobody made a statement. Nobody was forced to take the vitriol. It was only Ian Foster. So for nothing to have happened across that international break is the thing that annoyed me the most. But as I say, I have been reassured now for them to come out and a fairly strong statement. As I say, it wasn't just a couple of lines to say, we've got rid of him. Thanks and good luck. It was, you know, we got a few words from the chairman, which I think were absolutely necessary. And that has encouraged me now that we can rally around here. So with a lot of things, I think it's, again, I'll come back to the same point that I would have made the move sooner, but I'm just very glad it's better late than never.
Yeah, there's quite a lot of comments asking about the Warnock stuff. We will get onto that. Definitely want to ask Graham about that. Obviously, he would have been around the last time that Warnock was in charge. Putting it kindly. Ben, obviously,
I was around the last time Warnock was here, but I don't remember a lot of it.
No, you just dye your hair, so you get away with it. obviously,
slander that. You'll be hearing from my lawyers.
Obviously, Adam's mentioned it there. Obviously, the lack of a statement in support and stuff. Obviously, what do you make, Ben, of the decision not to bring in, like, we were so slow to bring in staff. Like, if Ian Foster was the man, why were we so slow to support him? Why, you know, Stoker just raided our whole backroom team. How come we weren't, you know, putting those measures in place to support him?
It's a weird one. There's several possibilities, but whichever one, there's an error been made. So the thought could have been that he had specific targets in mind. He'd identified those to the board and they'd said, we'll get those in the summer, perhaps. Or there was the thought that they might be able to get those targets out of contract. And then that proved not to be possible. In the first instance, it would have been a case of, we think that that Foster can cope until next season without them. If it was the thought that we can get them out of contract, that was a bit of a daft supposition to make. But either of those ways, I think either of those decisions or points of reasoning were flawed. It could have been the thought that, we'll be able to come to a consensus over the next few weeks over people, and they just could never come to a consensus between the head coach and maybe the director of football or the rest of the staff involved in those decisions. And the fact that then staff were parachuted in seemingly over the head of the head coach is a damning indictment of that initial decision-making process, which, whatever it was, we can only speculate until someone comes out and, you know, which I don't think it will ever come out, what the reasoning behind that was. So we can only speculate. But clearly there was a flaw in it, because they were willing to then break whatever plan had been put in place by doing what they did and making emergency appointments. And there were obviously issues behind the scenes, whether that was raised by the head coach, the other staff working behind the scenes, or the players. Someone had said, or it became apparent to someone, that we need some help here for whatever reason. So, there's no point getting into conjecture, but I think that clearly was an issue. Do I think the arrival of the staff has made a great difference? I'm not to my eye. Which isn't to say they're not doing anything or they haven't been valuable, but Neil Jusnip said he was quite keen to get back upstairs and yet remained in the dugout when staff had arrived, which isn't to say that that's anything. You know, he made quite clear that Ian Foster had asked him to stay in the dugout and he'd wanted to get back upstairs. We have to take that at face value. But then it seems odd that when staff has arrived to help Ian Foster, that he remained there. Does that suggest that Foster needed his help? That that Foster was maybe more out of his depth than we thought? Does that suggest that Neil Jusnip felt he needed more monitoring than he, you know, perhaps had wanted to give him more free rein, but maybe he was struggling and thought he needed to stay there to have an influence? I don't know. And people will have differing opinions on which of those is appropriate or not. Some will say maybe he does need to stay there and help his novice head coach, and some people will. You know, there's a popular narrative, isn't there, that he's a bit too involved in everything, a bit too controlling. I don't particularly have a personal opinion, because I don't feel I've got enough facts to draw a definite conclusion on that situation. But the whole staff, the whole assistant coaching and staff situation seems very badly managed. I think that's evident by the emergency measures that were taken a few weeks in. So whatever the causes were, which we can only speculate on, I think there's a lesson there, perhaps, that hopefully, again, we've got a club dealing with issues they've not dealt with before that they will now learn from. That's not a mistake that will be made again. And that's all you can ask for. Sometimes things present, obstacles present themselves. You think you're going to be able to overcome and it doesn't work out. You think, well, I won't leave that to chance next time. So, that I think is indicative of maybe some flaws in the process, but things can always be refined. And that's, having an opportunity to learn is never a bad thing. That's something that Ian Foster himself said when he came in. Having new opportunities or new hurdles to overcome is something good to learn from, because it means you can, you can handle that next time it presents itself. So let's hope that that's not something that we struggle with again.
Yeah, it feels like a bit of inexperience from Foster too. I was on LinkedIn the other day. I don't ask me why I've got Derek Adams as a contact after he shunned me for another publication, shall we say. He was recruiting for staff for his team and he doesn't even have a job. And it was just like, managers have these gaggle of people they bring with them, don't they? And hopefully in the summer, either if we go for the untried and tested, we bring them those people in over the summer to support them, or we bring in somebody who has that cohort with them. Graham, I've already touched on it. Ian Foster's reign eclipses that of player manager Stuart McCall, who only lasted 84 days. He was replaced by Neil Warnock. Are you surprised that wasn't the case again this time? I'm guessing from the shrug of your head, you're saying no.
Neil Warnock is never shy of getting a free pass into the director's box at Argyle. So he's been there a few times this season. And actually, I've sat behind him a couple of times when I've ventured over that side of the ground.
And you've not decided to get him on as a guest?
No. Neil Warnock is, what is he, 75, 76. He goes nowhere without Ronnie Jepson, who does all the work. Neil does all the talking. Yes, he would have been a mouthpiece. I suspect he would have got a lot of the fans on board and on side. But you just remember, he played at Home Park start of the season with Huddersfield. And you had a whole pre-season, get them organised. They looked, that didn't look like a championship side to me. They were not good. And I think championship is sophisticated tactically. You only have to see what Liam Manning did at half-time to change things. I think he's old school, six games, yeah, he could have done something, but he wouldn't have done it without Ronnie Jepson. What would that have done to all of the internal workings of the club? And what we'd have done to the players, and have yet another style of playing that he probably would have imposed. I mean, he's not familiar with playing out the back. He's more the old school, get it up and play from the top end of the pitch. And that's not us. So I think the decision to run with Neil and Nance was the right one. It was the only option. Nobody's going to take the team on for a six-game stretch. And I hope Neil enjoys the rest of the games looking from the director's box.
What was the football like last time he was here? Was it a bit more Route One?
It was bang it up to Adrian Littlejohn and do the rest. I mean, it wasn't a pretty watch. I mean, it's very difficult, different eras, different players. Don't forget where we were in the league at the time. It's a fantasy to think that football-wise he could impose himself on the team. Yes, he could motivate the fans, I'm sure. He could say the right things to the press and it'd be great. But tactical management in-game, I would worry that he would make much of a difference with the players that we've got and the way that we've been playing. I'm sure he was banging on Simon Hallett's door every day, let me in. But I think his time is gone. He achieved great things at the time, got us some famous victories. And I mean, I was actually stood next to him when he got sent off in the, I think it was the semi-final, when he leaped over the and stood behind the dugout with all the fans. It was right in front of me. I mean, you know, great stuff. It's folklore stuff.
You stick to him like a magnet by the sounds of it, Graham.
Yeah, but, yeah, I think the Aberdeen experience should tell us it's just not possible to change that sort of thing in a short time with no knowledge of the players. It's going to be a lot more than shouting from the rooftops to the press, I think.
Fair enough. Adam, obviously, similarities with Millwall, with obviously Joe Edwards. This is basically still going to be a question about firefighters, but, you know, both up-and-coming coaches from the FA's pathway. I know that you like your England setup. You like your Southgate football. Well, enough to go.
Yeah, like is one word.
Yeah. Obviously, Millwall opting to return to a former manager. Are you surprised that we haven't done that, even after Graham's impassioned rant?
Surprised, no. I mean, I feel like it's one of those situations where...
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
I guess you can look at it and say, well, anything's going to be better. And I think, would I have gone for Warnock despite everything that I completely take on board from Graham? I think for six games, I think I probably would have. But the alternative here is that we do have a situation now where it's kind of useful in the sense that it's make or break for Neil Jusnip. He was the man who oversaw the majority of this recruitment process for the manager. He was the one that oversaw what happened in January with the change of style and the players coming in. So I think going back to him and saying, well, Neil, you've made the mess, but we'll rally around you to get ourselves out of it. I think, yeah, I can see the appeal, and I can see the I can see why we go down that route. And I also wonder whether there's a financial element at play, not necessarily one that I agree with, but going through the process of recruiting a manager and sacking a manager within the space of 12 weeks or however long it was would not have been cheap for the club, and neither would bringing in Neil Warnock for a very small number of games, plus his backroom staff who he has to go everywhere with. So as much as I think that might have been a price worth paying, particularly when you compare it to how much relegation would cost, I can understand why they perhaps go down this route and say, well, not only can we get behind Jusnip, but it'd be cheaper as well, may well be enough. Now, this is one of those where in six games time, we're going to look at these comments with the benefit of hindsight. We're never going to know, I guess, with the way that this is going, whether Warnock would have kept us up. He may well have done. If we go down, it's one of those comments of saying, well, yeah, he'd have definitely kept us up. If we stay up, I don't think there'll be many more comments the other way saying, oh, he'd have definitely sent us down, but he might have done. We'll just never know. So as I'm saying all of this, again, in the knowledge that I absolutely would have gone for him, and in all honesty, I know I may be stealing Joe's point when he comes on a couple of hours later, but I would have done exactly the same thing in December as well. But it's a bit late for that now. But yeah, surprised is possibly not the right word. And I was going to say disappointed, but I don't necessarily think that's the right word either. As I say, I'd have done it, but you know, the route we've gone down is at least explainable, and I'm willing to support it for six games at least.
Yeah, Ben... Obviously, Foster and Edwards, their spells, obviously, Edwards' spell at the Den. Does that prove that swanning around St. George's Park coaching England's kids doesn't set you up for the rigours of championship football very well?
Possibly. And Rob Edwards seems to have done pretty well. I think ultimately it comes down to, like, coaching is not, I've seen sort of a few tweets from outside observers say, you know, Foster's obviously a great coach and it's just not worked out. But there's more to being a coach than understanding football philosophy, even in terms of coaching players. You know, there's famous examples from American sport where college sports are enormous, where you sort of teach the coach the cream of sort of like the athletic world before they go on to the professional leagues, where guys who are brilliant coaches in college are awful in the big leagues because you're dealing with men rather than boys, and you don't have the same, you know, it's like the same people say, don't they always talk to me, oh yeah, you know, football's played on grass, not on paper, you and your stats. It's like, I totally get that. Football is not all about, if it was all about, you know, matching up against oppositions on paper, if it was a computer game, we wouldn't bother playing the games on the grass. There's a lot more to it. There's psychology, there's mentality, there's attitude. And as you know, Ian Foster, for all I know, has an encyclopedic knowledge of football, but that's very different to being a leader of men, to being able to command a dressing room, to be able to communicate. I mean, it's press conferences. I'll let other people get onto that, you know, later in the show, possibly. But you know, he seemed combative, unnecessarily dismissive of the journalists in press conferences. Never really tried to reach out to the fans, build a rapport. You know, all of that is part of being a manager and a head coach. So you know, he what he was doing and the roles he's been fulfilling had no guarantee of developing into or sort of like metamorphosizing, as it were. Like, it was naturally going to occur that once he got into this position, those things would all click into place and happen. That's just not the way it works. The same way you've got, as Graham was describing, people like Warnock maybe, who are great motivators of men rather, but not necessarily hands-on and into the all the details. That's dealt with by other people. So I don't doubt that he has abilities. But yeah, just not, that doesn't automatically translate. And that's why I say it was a risk. It could have happened. It could have come off all right. But just having an education is very different to having experience, isn't it? We know that in any market, there's always the balance to be had between both of those things. And, you know, he had the experience to a degree, but not in head coaching, not as being the number one. And yeah, you know, that. You know, even going back to the communication thing, I think if he'd got the fans on side early doors, we'd probably still be in this situation, but with an infinitely larger amount of goodwill. People would have said, I'm really sorry, Ian, it's just not worked. Nothing personal. But the fact he sort of seems, people have felt he's mugged them off repeatedly with excuses, with, well, you know, you've got to respect people and you've not played teams like this for very long, have you? All of those sort of comments. You know, that's key basic 101 head coach skills, isn't it? You know, that's and if you haven't got that, then, you know, I'm not going to say anyone who's come through the, your question was about, you know, does putting out cones at St George's Park make you a good head coach? It, you know, Rob, you know, all these different coaches that have come through and either succeeded or not, it's not about their education, it's about those other key skills that they've developed. As you know, Ian Foster's undoubtedly a good coach, otherwise he wouldn't have been getting the work he's been getting in terms of, you know, those skills. But there's so many more skills he hasn't demonstrated that are necessary to be a head coach or a manager of especially of a professional team in a top league like the Championship.
Yeah, just moving on to some of the comments or the questions, sorry, that we're getting in the comments. Obviously there's a lot on the plans. Graham, what are your thoughts on the plans to replace Foster with Neil Jusnip and Kevin Nanskeville? Obviously, they're four games for them last time, 0 wins but 3 draws, 9 goals. Are you happy enough?
And you forgot about Simon Ireland as well and the goalkeeper.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, sorry.
So there are four still there. I don't think there was any other option with 6 games to go, throwing in somebody like Warnock with a gamble, but it would have been a disruptive one. I go back to the one Argyle theme that Shuey sort of cultivated so successfully and got the fans on board. and something that Ian Foster singularly ignored. I mean, I just didn't understand why he never reached out to fans. I mean, I was told there was a hospitality event, a club breakfast, where I think it was Jimmy Dickinson and Sam Morcombe were due to speak. And for some inexplicable reason, Ian Foster pulled them just before they're about to speak. So you've got all the sponsors of the club there. And then he breezes past the window of the hospitality without even looking in. You think, hang on a minute, you're the head person of the club. The least you could do is pop in and thank the sponsors for what they've done, all the support. Just imagine you've shelled out thousands of pounds of the club, and then you see him just walking past, not even acknowledging you. And I think that when I found that out, I thought there's something wrong here. This insular approach, if it doesn't win over the fans, how's it going to win over the players? And going back to the England setup, I think we forgot Ian Foster was assistant manager to Paul Cook at Portsmouth when we were in the playoff run against them. He was on the sidelines when Hartley scored that winning goal. But that's the nearest he's got that I can see to competitive league football. And there's a big difference when you've got seasoned pros who suss you out straight away. They would know within a few training sessions of whether the guy's got it or not. And then when you're not communicating with players, when you're not telling them why they're not in the squad, you haven't got time to speak to them, that's not conducive to a team ethic that's going to keep you up. Something went desperately wrong. He got more within himself, and England under 20s, don't forget, that's tournament football. You've got the players there for a relative short space of time. And of course, you're older than them. The kids are looking up to you. Seasoned pros have been around a bit. They're looking at you. They want leadership. They want clarity. They want belief. And I just don't think they got, in the end, they didn't get it. And it was showing.
Yeah, we're nearly at that point where we're gonna switch you out. Is there anything you guys want to cover specifically that you've got on your chest? Or shall I just keep going through these questions?
I'm sure the other lads will have plenty of their own opinions to share. So let's field some more questions on their behalf and let them rant and rave.
There's a very talkative section coming up soon. Let's pick one at random. I had one ready, and then Joe private messaged me. Adam, genuine question. What do you think Foster wishes he did differently? I don't think he's the type to reminisce or to live to regret, but what was his biggest mistake in your eyes? I mean, I think Graham's touched on that.
Oh, plenty. Yeah, I think the way that he handled the media, both in front of the camera and, as I say, in terms of the supporters and sponsors, was not befitting of someone who's in a leadership position at a football club, in all honesty. He's there was just no reason. I know it's ground we've covered, but it's worth covering again. There was just no reason for him to be quite as prickly in his press conferences as he was. Because what did it gain? He's going into a show. He's pitting himself against supporters who, in my eyes, for the first few weeks of his tenure, gave him more than a decent enough break for somebody who, as I think we've said, biggest achievement so far is laying out cones at St. James's Park and for Steven Gerrard in Saudi Arabia. You know, we were more than willing to give him a chance based on the way that he, based on the lack of experience that he had. And I think that's possibly a bit of faith in us, in the Argyle board, who had made some excellent leadership decisions up to that point. If I'm in Ian Foster's shoes, the last thing I want to do when my credentials start being questioned like that is start to fight and make things worse. There's nothing to be gained from it. And there was nothing to be gained from it. It just helped it make it a bit more toxic quickly. And there's no doubt that would have fed into the players as well. The way that his communication methods alienated us. Now imagine if you're having to work with him every day as he tried to get methods across that you already knew weren't working. So for me, it goes back to the big thing. I have no doubts as to some of Ian Foster's coaching skills. I think we've all been across that. He's obviously got some talent because he's got some jobs and he's obviously come out of interviews very well. But he's got an awful lot of work to do on his managerial skills. And if I'm in Ian Foster's shoes now and I am in a reflective mood, which would make a change, I'd be looking at it and saying, right, those are the skills I have to work on now. I need to go away. I need to work on my media handling. I need to work on my interpersonal skills. And if I'm going to be tactical and something like that, I need to work on my substitutions as well. But that's another issue entirely. You know, we may well see him back in a managerial position again, although I wouldn't bank on it because I don't think there's a single club in the Championship that would swap their manager for Ian Foster right now. But if we are to see him back in a managerial position at any club in the country, those are the skills that he needs to be improved on first. Because if he walks into an interview at this stage after this experience he's had, he's not going to be able to call on the relative success he's had at England youth level anymore. The first question he's going to be asked by prospective owners, chairman, director of football, what have you, is going to be what went wrong at Plymouth Argyle? And he better have a good answer to that, because if he starts fighting back over that, he's not got a hope of getting another job. So, yeah, that... I know it's been covered in excellent detail by everyone that's been on today, but that is the main thing that he needs to change in amongst quite a bit.
Yeah, I think when I said in my intro that, you know, it feels like the right decision for everyone, I feel like he can walk into another job and just say, you know, I wasn't given the time, I didn't have the time to turn it around, you know, second lowest or lowest budget in the league. You know, there are excuses that could be made there. So I sort of expect to see him back, maybe not soon, but at some point. I feel like he might have. He obviously worked the job interview of us pretty well. I'm basically just going to scattergun different questions here. Ben, obviously with Neil and Nance back, do you think we're at least likely to see a return of that attacking football that we as a fan base seem to crave?
I don't think we have much of a choice, because our best players are attacking players. That's not a knock on, you know, I think Gibson, Galloway are easily Championship level defenders. And there's a smattering of quality throughout the squad. Cooper, Hazard, you can argue, easily Championship quality. Not they can both play together. Mumba, I think, is a very competent Championship level player. And, you know, there's others that might be with a bit of time. Forshaw clearly is, if he's able to be on the pitch regularly and if he's motivated now. But our best two players, I think, are Morgan Whittaker and Ryan Hardy, really, in terms of what they've achieved this season. As good as Gibson and Galloway are, we haven't kept a lot of clean sheets. We have put the ball in the back of the net an awful lot. And that's not to say that binary view is how to measure how good players have been. In you know, that doesn't work that way. But I think that's where we got results. That's where we got success, was by doing that. And I think that, as Schumacher, I think, did quite pragmatically, you have to make the best of the best players you have. Yes, we've lost now Azaz, and so that puts the creative onus on other players. But I don't think that players like Adam Randall, Jordan Houghton, Adam Forshaw are completely devoid of that ability. And I think, as has been proved by our fullbacks, they're capable of producing an assist here and there over the last few weeks, despite as awful as we've been in attacking output. So there is ability there to get goals, and that's what we need to do, because ultimately the more goals we score, the more likely we are to win games. We've proved that we're not great at keeping clean sheets, so trying to somehow, you know, keep this theory that Foster was playing of, you know, limiting chances. I'm not saying we should be kamikaze in quite the same way that Schumacher was, because we don't have the creative abilities that we did. You know, Kane Kessler-Hayden, I believe, is the loss that a lot of people aren't crediting quite as much as they should. But we don't have, you know, we don't have a Finnazaz to come up with string pulling and control. But there does need to be an improvement on what we've been doing recently. We need to get behind defensive lines where we've been playing in front of them. And trying to hit balls over the top rather than playing through them. I still see a comment there about Dan Scar returning. I think if we're going to play a back three, which Juicenip did when we converted from Schumacher's back four when Schumacher left, then I do think Dan Scar has a good role to play. He has many limitations, but if you look at plenty of games this season where... I think there's more games this season where he's put his body on the line, headed everything away, the proverbial brick etc., like Watford, etc., than there are where he's been culpable for a goal. And he has been culpable for a goal or two. And I think possibly some of that was just down to tiredness as we were getting into the real churn of the season. He's not been playing for a while. I think he could really have a big role to play in the last six games. If he can come back in the middle of a three, Matt Phillips seems to have lost his head a little bit at times in recent games. I wonder if he can come back in the back three. Plegg was there to the other side, and either Gibson or Galloway. I know you want to play both of those at the same time, and it's annoying that they both, their best position is both the left side of that. But I just wonder if Scar might be sort of a rock you can tie your flag to. That said, I wouldn't complain if Gibson was chosen over him in the centre of that sort of setup. But I think an experienced back three, Dan Scar with a point to prove and a real, hopefully, a vein of fitness, given that he's had such a rest, could be pivotal. And a few other. I think Joe Edwards getting a couple of games. You know, I keep saying that he's not championship standard, but I don't see too many mistakes in his games either, to be honest. I don't sometimes know what I see as other people watch. I'm not saying he necessarily comes out with, and I know Aaron, you're not his biggest fan, and he's not always going to, you know, produce moments of magic, but he will also be a pretty steady Eddie. So there's a mix, I'm sure there's a balance to be found in the squad that's there, that, you know, hopefully now will have a fire lit under it and be able to be able to express themselves in a forward-thinking way, because I think that the handbrake's been on for far too long now. You just hope they haven't forgot how to do it. And we've sort of seen, haven't we, with Hardy sometimes snatching at chances. I don't think it's down to necessarily confidence, just ring rust. You know, he's not getting 8-10 chances a game to be able to bury two or three. So both of those numbers are slight exaggerations, but you get my point. So I think that is the best way forward. We're going to concede anyway. So, well, we have been. You know, when was the last time we kept a clean sheet? Or how many have we kept in the past, sort of, you know, in the season? So it's likely we're going to concede anyway. So let's just put what we can on the front foot. And at least, at the very least, if we're going to go down, it'll have been entertaining. You know, that's one thing. You know, if we'd have gone down under Schumacher, I don't think anyone would have said it was a rubbish ride. And I think that's, you know, going at, not, let's go out with a bang and not a whimper. I think that's probably my last comment of the night. So, you know, we've got six games. Let's go out. Let's go down fighting.
Yeah, you managed to stretch that out nicely. we'll get round to you all quickly. A couple of quick, quicker questions, which I've lost. Toby asks, what avenue do you think that we should go down next? Somebody tried and tested, or another gamble on a young, untried, unknown manager? Graham, you're not a fan of the big firefighter in Warnock. Are you a fan of a young up and coming, or does this?
Well, I think part of the problem with the January recruitment was it was the middle of the season. Mm. So we've got a close season to properly assess. Some managers will be out of contract. Some it'll be easier to prize away from their clubs rather than mid-season. So I have to say we've got to go for some experience. I don't necessarily say it has to be championship. But there are up-and-coming managers. I mean, the one I quite liked went to Swansea, Luke Williams, who was at Notts County and got them up. He was the sort of manager that I think that we doubt. I think they appointed him the day before Ian Foster was appointed, or very close. It's that sort of manager I would like. But the most important thing is the man management, and particularly for me, the one Argyll. We've got to believe in him. He's got to put himself about. He's got to be with the fans, not necessarily be one of them. And I'm not saying he's got to go down the Dolphin for a few pints, but he's got to embrace what we had, because what we had over the last 4 years or so was a magical period in the club's history. And it's been decimated in just under 3 months. And we can't afford that mistake again. So experience, yes. Youthfulness, quite happy with, if he's got a proven track record. But he's got to be up front and centre as the man that leads the club.
Yeah, there was a manager who often frequented the Dolphin that managed to keep us in the Football League. So, Yeah. Adam, onto Friday and in general, obviously massive game. Is it the biggest game of the season? And on that, do you think we're going to stay up?
Yeah, well, it's without a doubt the biggest game of the season thus far, until the next one, I suppose. But yeah, this is the one that I totally agree with what Ben and, to be honest, many others have said, that this is very much make or break at this point. It's one of those where the mood, particularly with it being the early game and being on Sky, and particularly given who it's against, the mood around it will be completely determined by what we see on Friday night. Will we stay up? If we win, we've got every chance. And if we don't, I think we're done for. I think that's the easiest way to put it. And personally, maybe it's heart rolling overhead, but I think we will win. I think we've done this in just enough time. And I think we're going to have players now who are desperate to prove that they weren't the problem. That they're actually, you know, it was the coach. They've not got Ian Foster to hide behind now. If that was the case, they've got to come out fighting. And with that, with the fact that we've got some renewed confidence, with the fact that it can't be any less attacking than it has been, and going to Rotherham side, who by every metric imaginable are the worst team in the league, I do think we'll get the victory. I don't think it'll be cruise control, but I think we will just about squeak it. And if we do, I think that'll be just enough to keep us up. But it's going to be tight.
Ben, thoughts on Friday? Are we staying up?
I've been saying but if we win, I think we will. And if we don't, I don't think we get the 7 points we need to stay up. It's that critical for me. I think we're not going to get 7 points elsewhere. I'm not going to get six, even if we get a draw, I don't think we get 6 points elsewhere. So, yeah, I do think it is. I'd like to see a 3-5-2 if we're going to go with three at the back. You can then have the wing-backs, two midfielders supporting, you know, whether that would be Bundu or Wayne to play with Hardy, but he's absolutely knackered. You can just see on his face when he's running around. It's just painful for him. He needs someone there. I wasn't too impressed with Bundu's, I think not yesterday, but the last performance. I didn't think it was his worst performance of the season, but he did enough yesterday to convince me that that was an aberration, and he has some nice little touches and things. If he can maybe, you know, slip some little balls through to Hardy to run onto, I think that could be the way to go. But we'll see what the play, you know, whether it's going to be Juzenip laying out the plan, or they're going to all come together, the staff and the players, and say, what do we think, lads? Just for this one, at least, we need to win. What are we going to do? This really is crunch. You know, I don't think the games, you know, like the Leicester game, etc., are we expecting to get anything from that? I do think this is probably the biggest game of the season, and maybe we'll get to Hull. You know, maybe if, depending on what we get here, QPR will be bigger, but I really do think this is going to be, you know, it's got to that point where it's this really is make or break. Yeah, Sam's the headliner. We're the warm-up act. So you've got a second warm-up act coming next.
Yeah, we're due to be joined by rotate you guys out, and Chris Errington is waiting in the wings. I can see you backstage there, Chris. You can't see me. Well, you can't see me.
What a great job. Great job he's done over the past 13 weeks, I think, should be said. I think a lot of fans have echoed that sentiment. So,
yeah, exactly. Graham, before we switch you all out then, thoughts on Friday, and do we stay up?
Well, I think we forget the problems Rotherham gave us in Shuey's last game. I mean, Tom Eaves is all over us, and that worries me. And I'm not an advocate of Dan Scar coming back particularly, but if there is one game and Tom Eaves is in the opposition, Dan Scar is the man to nail him physically and mentally and any other way that's legal. I'm not sure we're going to get a win against Rotherham, but I work on the principle of average points. And if we get a draw at Rotherham, win it against QPR, that's 4 points. But it, ultimately, it's not just how we do, it's how badly Huddersfield and Sheffield Wednesday do. In theory, we could lose all six games, and if they lose all six games, we stay up. So I think we need to be watching what Huddersfield and Sheffield Wednesday do. Wednesday had a bit of a renaissance, and they've fallen away after the hammering at Ipswich. Huddersfield, don't know, jury's out. If we can get a win somewhere and get above Birmingham and Stoke, and then it gives us a little bit more leeway for the results to fall our way. that I'm more prepared for the squeakiest of squeaky bum times at home to Hull. That's going to be, I think we'll be watching our smartphones more than we're going to be watching the game, I suspect.
Back in the day, get those old portable radios out with the big air.
The old transistors, yeah.
Right, I think this is where we say goodnight to you three and we swap you out.
Thank you.
Cheers, guys. See you soon. Yeah. I'm going to do this incredibly incredibly smoothly. There we go. How's that? There we go. Look at that.
Magic.
A big switch. Thanks for joining us, Chris. I think we're gonna run through you first. And I've got a few questions lined up, a few people in the chat as well. Obviously, you've had a bit of a busy week, so we want to get you off to bed if we can. Obviously, before we get on to the dismissal, just a quick one. Obviously, Ben mentioned it there, and I think I echo most of the fan base that, you know, to say the work you've done in recent weeks has been excellent. I think you've really pressed well in your pressers. But obviously, before we get into the dismissal, what was Foster like as a person? It never really felt like he wanted to bond with the fans. Did you feel any of that too in your time working with him? Obviously, you know, there was a few questions about his relationship with players as well. So I don't know. What was he like?
Yeah. Well, thanks first of all for the invite to join you tonight and talk about Ian Foster's dismissal. It was a late night last night, wasn't it? It was about 10 to 11 when the announcement was officially confirmed, although I think it was well known before then that it was going to be happening. So, yeah, a bit of a late night last night. So I will try and catch up on a bit of sleep this evening. But what was Ian Foster like as a guy? I mean, he was a nice guy. And this is, I think, one of the problems he had was that the fans only ever really saw him in a press conference environment. And particularly when results start going badly, it's not always the happiest place to be when you're sat there as a journalist asking questions to a manager whose team aren't playing well, aren't getting results, who's coming under pressure, who's being booed by his own fans. You're never going to see the best of a person in that particular environment. I do remember when we met him for the introductory press conference, which, you know, was only, you know, 88 days ago or whatever it was, that after we sat down and did the formal question and answer with Neil Dewsnip, Andrew Parkinson and Ian Foster, we got invited into the players' lounge for tea, coffee and biscuits with the purpose of just having an off-the-record chat with Ian Foster to get to know him, to have a chat, to find out a little bit about, you know, his time in Saudi Arabia, family moving over to this country. And that's the first time in all my time covering Argyle that I've had that experience of meeting a manager and then having a informal chat and get to know him. So I feel that one of the unfortunate sides of his short tenure at Argyle was that I don't think people really got to know the real Ian Foster. They saw him in the sound bites, they saw him in the press conferences, and, you know, if he'd done a fans forum, if he had arrived in the summer, if the fans had had a chance to sort of get to know him a little bit, then they might have cut him a bit more slack for longer. But because he was thrust in, press conference defeat, press conference bad result, press conference, it didn't really help him build up the rapport with the fans that he clearly needed to have. And unfortunately, he didn't have.
Yeah, I'm just interested in your thoughts as well on the decision by Simon Hallett to make a change so late in the season. Obviously, you know, previously we had the issue with, he said, you know, about leaving it a bit too late with Adams. What are your thoughts on the change? Do you think it's the right time?
Yes, it was the right time. You could argue after the Preston defeat, when the mood at Home Park was pretty awful, wasn't it? That would have been probably a better time, because then you'd have had a 2-week international break and everything would have had a time to settle down. But in all my dealings with Simon Hallett over the years, who's always been very polite and helpful and everything to me and to the other media as well, I should add, he is a mid to long term thinker. He doesn't take decisions for the short term. He doesn't take knee-jerk reaction. So I think he probably gave Ian Foster a little bit longer in charge than a lot of other clubs would have done in the circumstances. But so I can see where he was coming from. You know, they've just signed a guy on a really long contract. They would have been desperately hoping that things would have turned around. They could have stayed up. And then maybe with a summer of a rebuild and things would have settled down and then they could have got going. But it was a strange old atmosphere, wasn't it, on Easter Monday against Bristol City. Mm. You could just sense it wasn't quite right, was it? And if they got a goal in the first half an hour when they played well, you know, who knows what would have happened. But it turned out the way it did. And, you know, it was not long after the game that you started to get the vibes that, you know, there's going to be something happening pretty soon, and that's what happened. So on a human level, I put it in a piece I wrote in the Herald today and in Plymouth Live. On a human side, I feel really sorry for him. His family have moved back to this country, wife, young son, really difficult for them. As football fans, we all see things, you know, from our club's perspective, and it's black and white. But when you get to know somebody, even for a short spell of time like I did, and you get to interact with him, you see him, you speak, you chit-chat, you know, I think if you're in that situation, you would perhaps have a little more sympathy than perhaps the fan that's never met the man and never spoken to him.
Yeah, I think that's a real key thing to remember. Obviously, there are, you know, humans involved here as well. He has still lost his job, even if he is going to be well remunerated for that. Yes. You know, you mentioned Hallett already. Were you surprised? And obviously, he's a mid to long term thinker, as you say. Were you surprised that there was no form of public backing for Ian? Obviously, we had Foster, Hardy, Edwards, Houghton in recent weeks try and rally the fan base for support, but we heard nothing from the boardroom. Was that a surprise to you or not really?
I made a couple of requests, but, you know, I think the club felt that if they said anything, it would be interpreted as the dreaded vote of confidence. And then everyone then assumes that, well, they've given him the dreaded vote of confidence. They're probably going to sack him in a couple of games' time anyway. So, yeah. You know, Argyle, in situations like this, over quite a long period of time, tend to keep their cards very close to their chest. I take on board what the fans say about the club make a lot about being open and transparent, and were they open and transparent this time? I do think, though, there are times when it is very difficult for a club to be open and transparent, because whatever they then say is going to get turn to a particular person's perception of a situation. So I think you can be an open and transparent about a lot of things, but maybe when you get to the manager's future, it is difficult. But I can see both sides of the argument on that. But I think I get from the club's point of view why they didn't say anything, although from a journalist's and a fan's point of view, something would have been better than leaving a vacuum that then is filled by lots of speculation and comment from all sorts of people. So sometimes you're best off getting out in front of the story than letting it overtake you.
Yeah, there was just like a black hole, wasn't there, on like socials and stuff yesterday that just allowed rumour it turned out to be true. But did you see any indications yesterday during the press conference that he was likely to be dismissed? I know that he said, I don't know whether that was to yourself or to BBC Devon, I think he said that he had no worries about his job. It just looked like such a dejected figure answering those questions. Did you think he was going?
I thought there was a decent chance of it. Yes. He was dejected, but, you know, like any good football person, he doesn't like losing games of football. And in all of this, it must have been a pretty dismal time for him where, you know, the results aren't going his way. He's not stupid. He will have known what the situation was and what it could mean for him and his future at the club, even though he'd been there for a short time. Like I say, I mean, even before the game, I mean, I don't know what others feel. it did feel like everyone was going around thinking, if we don't win today, you know, there could be a change. And like I say, there was a bit of a vibe around the place. You know, people were scurrying around doing bits and pieces, and you think, oh, I wonder if something's going on. And I think before the Rotherham game particularly, which, you know, is clearly very important, it all felt as though it was the right time to happen. Regardless of how sympathetic you are to Ian Foster and whether you feel he had a fair crack of the whip or anything, I don't think anyone could argue that right now, in the position that Argyle are in, that it's the wrong decision to have replaced him. You can debate about whether it should be Neil Dewsnip and Kevin Nanscavall in charge, whether it should be Neil Warnock, whether Joe Edwards should be leading the players, or whatever view. That's a talking point and a debate. But I think changing the manager, it had to be done.
Yeah, you mentioned them there. Obviously, Neil and Dewsnip are the chosen ones. What do you make of them coming back in for another stint as caretakers?
Well, it was, in the circumstances, with six games of the season left, it was probably going to be Neil Dewsnip and Kevin Nanscavall or Neil Warnock, wasn't it? I know there's other managers that are out of work and you could have potentially brought in, but in the circumstances, you want somebody who cares about the club and is prepared to do what it takes to try and keep them in the Championship. Neil Warnock, you know, what a fantastic career he's had, manager he's been. Would have been great from a journalist point of view. He'd have definitely fired the fans up. But if you were talking 10 or 12 games left to go in the season, a little bit longer, where he could come in and have a little bit of a chance to make a proper stamp on the team, then maybe yes. But we've got a game on Friday at Rotherham. We're at home to QPR next Tuesday. We've got a game against Leicester the following Friday night. And then you've got Stoke, Hull and Millwall. There's not going to be much time for training or anything like that. So I think on balance, in these circumstances, you're better off sticking with people that the players know. Neil and Kevin know the players, vice versa, and see if you can, you know, get the best out of them. I thought Argyle played reasonably well when they were in charge before, didn't win a game, which, you know, is slightly concerning when Argyle need to win games now. It's not a great situation for Argyle to be in. There's no sugarcoating it, is it? But I think in the circumstances, I would have gone with Neil Dewsnip and Kevin Nanscavall. I'd be leaning on Joe Edwards and Jordan Houghton and people like that who've spoken very well in press conferences recently as well. Try and make it a collective effort rather than one person, you know, trying to lead the way. Make this a collective effort. And, you know, if you all pull together, sometimes, you know, really good things can happen in football. So that's my take on it. But I can understand why people would say, well, why haven't they brought Neil Warnock in? He's made it clear that he would have taken up the chance if he'd done it, and clearly he's got a track record for keeping clubs in the Championship in the past, although, you know, he has had a spell up at Aberdeen recently which didn't go very well and ended quite quickly.
Yeah, obviously you mentioned the quick turnaround, you know, this time, what is it, basically a month to today, tomorrow, Thursday, that the season's over. So obviously quick turnaround. Obviously, we saw yesterday a real sign of intent from the players, and you couldn't really question theirs or the fans' efforts. Just how important is that unity going to be over the next six games? Obviously, we've heard for a while that it's this the one Argyle, and it needs to be a united front now more than it has been for a number of years, isn't it?
Yes, it does. I think any time that you've got division, you know, anywhere at a football club, it certainly doesn't help matters. I do think there's, you know, a big onus on the players. I mean, we can talk about the fans, that the part they've got to play, and what Neil Dewsnip and Kevin Nanscavall and the other coaching staff, Simon Ireland and Daryl Flahey and everyone behind the scenes and the importance they've got. But, you know, ultimately it is down to the players. And, you know, I look at those two games over Easter and they had the chances to have put Norwich in a very difficult position on Good Friday. And I'm not saying he would have gone on to win the game, but they should have come away from Norwich with a draw from that game. I know Norwich had more goal attempts, but clear-cut chances, Argyle should have been coming away from that game with a draw. And in the first half an hour against Bristol City, they played with a tempo, with a passion on the front foot that everyone wanted to see from them. You have to turn that into a goal or two. And you can point the other, but the players are the ones that are mainly responsible for trying to keep Argyle up now. And they need to, you know, try and press a reset button, go again. They've got different voices, different instructions. I would imagine we'll see Argyle play a bit more like we did earlier on in the season. That's maybe another benefit to sticking with Neil Jusnip and Kevin Nanskeville rather than bringing somebody else in and trying to tinker with styles and shapes and formations when you've really got no time to work on things like that. But unity is important. I mean, you could feel the club were putting players up in the last week or two, and you've obviously picked up, and I'm sure lots of people did. It felt like they were picking players who speak well, who put out the right line, that was another factor where you think this is heading one way if results don't improve very quickly. And then the manager's very critical of the referee after the game against Norwich City. And, you know, that's another sign that, you know, he knows that the pressure is really on. And so it just felt like an accumulation of things. It was building up, wasn't it? And it was just a case of if they didn't get that win against Bristol City, it was likely to change. And so it has done.
Yeah, just two quick questions then before we let you go. Like you said, you've had a busy week. So obviously Kenny's asked.
Yes, I will. Yeah, I always try to. And sometimes managers in those situations like a little bit of time to collect their thoughts. And sometimes they'd rather just leave it as it was. I tried that with Derek Adams, for example, when he left. I got on pretty well with Derek for much of the time he was there, but he didn't really want to sort of, you know, but that's each individual's choice. But yes, I will definitely try and get hold of Ian and get his side of the things. And, you know, I'd like to think that with the questions that he was asked, you know, sometimes you have to ask, you know, what you might call tough questions or difficult questions, but you want to try and give the manager the opportunity to state his case and his belief on what's happened, why he's picked certain players, why certain players haven't been picked, why he's used certain tactics, why he's done this, that and the other. The idea is to try and find out as much information as that manager's willing to give you about why they've taken certain decisions and actions. And then readers and listeners and viewers can then draw their conclusions from that. So I'd like to think that he would feel that although the questions were, you know, a little bit difficult at times, it was with the aim of trying to get his side of the situation.
Yeah, final one. Are we staying up?
Are we staying up? I felt pretty confident, as one of your other guests will know, I felt pretty confident all season they'd stay up. I still think just about. I heard Graham just before I came on, and he said about squeaky bum time, and it feels like it's going to go maybe to the Hull City game. And to be honest, if you said to me now that Argyle were going to the last game of the season needing a win to stay up, I think I'd probably take that now. I don't know how you guys would feel about that.
I don't know.
It wouldn't be a nice experience, I know, but I just
think back to all of those performances where we need all of those games where we need a performance, like,
yeah,
you know, that game up in Rochdale where we should have won, the game against Grimsby, the MK Dons on the final day. When we need a result, we collapse. So I'd rather not.
But I could throw back at you like Shrewsbury away last season when they nicked the goal at the end and things like that. I think as fans, maybe sometimes, and you know, I can think of my club, and you tend to remember the scars more than you know, the happy memories and things like that. But I think they can do it. Clearly, they're going to have to score goals. Can they beat Rotherham? Yes. Can they beat QPR? Yes. Leicester would be tough, although they're not on a great run of form at the moment, are they? Can they beat Stoke? Well, who knows? That the Stephen Schumacher factor in that game, anything could happen in that. Could they beat Millwall? Well, Millwall have just lost to Rotherham. Could they win at home on the last day of the season when they need a point or three to stay up? Yes, they can do that. So, yeah, it's not looking as good as it did a couple of weeks ago, certainly not. But there's enough games there, there's enough points they can take if they can galvanise themselves, play like they did in the first half an hour against Bristol City, start sticking away a couple of chances. I still think they can do it, but, you know, we all know it's going to be difficult.
Appreciate you jumping on, Chris. We'll let you go.
My pleasure. Always happy to come on and have a chat. Hopefully, after the season's ended, we can maybe have a catch up and a debrief on how it all turned out.
Yeah, sounds good. Sounds good. We'll pencil you in for that, and I'll be sure to follow you up on that email. Really appreciate that. I'll drop you off the screen because it's not as easy from your side. But feel free to stay and listen if you really want to. Replacing Chris is James from One Team in Devon. I haven't introed the other two yet. Everybody will know the mug in the top right hand corner that belongs to Joe Bell, not the mug down the side that you can sign up to our little mailing list to get 10% off when we launch our shop. Very, very soon. And below him, Nick Saunders-Smith, the OG of the original podcast. How are you, Nick? You good?
I am pretty good, thanks.
Yeah, I'm just going to jump straight in. Just give us your initial thoughts on the sacking of Ian Foster.
I mean, it's been covered a lot already, really. A lot of people said what a lot of us are thinking. I mean, Chris just said it then. It kind of had to happen. I think most people agree that, maybe not most, but a lot of people agree that it probably should have happened after Preston. I hear an echo. It probably should have happened after Preston. It's just, I don't know. I don't really feel that relieved because I don't think that it should be Doosnip taking us forward personally for a couple of reasons. I'd say one, I don't see that uniting the fans, which we all know that's going to be really key in our survival efforts, having one real strong unified voice at home park. I mean, the moment it was announced and going on 24 hours later, nearly, there are still people talking about, oh, no, it should be Doosnip. The fact that Warnock's come out and said that he would have done it if he was asked has only continued that. I don't think Doosnip was the way to go because I don't think he's going to unite the fans. I think it's going to be a harder job for him than last time. Last time, essentially, he was just continuity from Stephen Schumacher. This time, he can't do continuity. He's got to actually fix the problem. Yeah, I've got big question marks over when he can do it. In January, I said that I didn't want it to be Warnock. I was fully behind Hallett and the board when they wanted to do their long-term appointment. It didn't seem, with half season's a long time to go, it's not a firefighter's time. I didn't think that was time for bringing someone like Warnock then, personally, but right now, you want to galvanise the players, you want leadership, you don't necessarily need a tactical revolution. I can see the positives for Doosnip in that obviously he's been working with the team, but when you look at his credentials, it's, what, four games of league management, of club management, nothing in a relegation battle, so you can question his suitability there. And of course, you could, in theory, bring in Warnock, and you've still got Doosnip there to support him, so it doesn't need to be a complete revolution when you've got, like Chris was just saying, Houghton and Edwards there as two clear leaders who, we know from what Shuey said last season, they were stepping up into more of a tactical leadership position. They were working more on the tactic side of it. I think Doosnip said earlier in the season that the two of them were working very closely together when he was doing his interim management, so you can have them supporting him along with Doosnip from the background. So I think that's probably the way I would have gone. The charismatic leadership to get all the fans back on side and just trying to just trying to will our way over the line, because I don't think it's necessarily going to be about bringing a tactician at this point. But I don't know, that's probably my take. Relieved that Foster's gone, disappointed that we've probably lost 2 weeks and at least a point had he been removed at YC to be the right time, and a bit frustrated that, you know, is Doosnip the person, particularly with the must win of all must wins on Friday, really.
Before I ask you for your thoughts, Joe, 1,660 of you, there are more, 1,660 of you are currently watching us on Twitter. Go and subscribe to us on YouTube, please. Thank you. Was that kind enough? Joe, go on, follow it up. Give us your thoughts. You definitely haven't chewed our ears off in the group chat. So,
no, I haven't. And I, you know, everyone who wouldn't have been watching ITV West Country or listening to BBC Radio Devon this morning wouldn't have already heard this already. Do go check them out on, you know, your catch-up platforms if you haven't already. What are my thoughts? There was an air of inevitability, wasn't there? It was coming. It was always going to be about when. I agree totally with what Nick says. Perhaps, you know, it's hindsight's a wonderful thing in sport and particularly football, but that 2 weeks now seems like a real waste for me. I understand that the football club wanted to give him as much time as possible. I think, you know, whatever your opinions on Ian Foster, the guy, are, we all wanted this to work, because almost every decision that this board have made since they took overall control at the club has been positive and has worked. So we didn't want there to be a blot on the copybook. Nobody wants that. So there's that. I've got so many thoughts, Aaron. I'm going to be on for the rest of the night. I won't throw them all on now. But the overriding feelings are, it had to happen to keep us in the championship, I think. You know, there's no guarantee that this is going to keep us up. Of course there isn't. But it gives us one last fighting chance of doing it. And overall, I'm a human and I have empathy towards a young man who's trying to make a career out of football. And unfortunately, he's been thrown into the deep end, A, by himself. He's put himself in this position by applying for a pretty big and difficult job straight off the bat of international management. But I also feel like he's been put in the deep end a little bit by the football club. There has been a number of issues over the 3 months. The key ones being the lack of support staff-wise that Ian Foster received. Now, that needs to be clarified by somebody, and quickly, as to why it took, 10 weeks to get Ian Foster a number two, 10, 12 weeks. We're told that we're going to wait for the right person to become available. And the person that we choose had been available for 3 months before he's appointed. So, you know, there's that. And then there's I understand what Chris is saying, that if Argo had come out with something in the last couple of weeks, it would have seen as the proverbial vote of confidence. But I just feel like they've sort of hung him out to dry a little bit. And something is better than nothing. And, you know, we'd have all drawn our conclusions. Of course we would have. But we were getting a lot of things fed to us last season when everything was going swimmingly. We were riding the wave. We were getting all these statements and videos and interviews and everything everywhere. It was everywhere you looked last season. This year, when things haven't gone right, we've had radio silence. Now, look, Simon Hallett has his own life. He's not in the country all the time. He's got time zones to deal with. He's got other business interests. I understand that, you know, he's said it himself that, you know, he's sort of a non-executive chairman, wasn't it? He called himself years ago. That's why he's put this strong leadership team in place here in Plymouth. But I just feel like something to come out and say, you know, as we put to Chris, you know, I'm not letting you take the credit for all those questions, Aaron. You made me type them.
Type some very stupidly long words that I can't say. So thanks for that.
Yeah, I apologize for making you say some of those. But we've had, you know, as I said, we've had Houghton, Edwards, Hardy, you know, even Foster himself come out and try and issue a rally cry. Now, we finally got that rally cry from Simon Hallett at the bottom of yesterday's statement, but it's taken to the sacking of the head coach to get it. And I just feel like something like that before the Easter period, he doesn't even have to mention Ian Foster. If he doesn't want to mention the head coach because it will be shown as a vote of confidence, that's fine. But I'd have really liked something. It wouldn't have made a, it probably wouldn't have made a jot of difference to anyone's feelings. Just something to come out, give us something to cling on to.
Did you see what Preston did with Lowe earlier in the season?
Yeah,
that I think I saw some Argyle fans mentioning that that was an option there. Was that like a joint statement by Ridsdale and Lowe together?
Yeah, it was. I think it was the three of them, wasn't it? Ridsdale, Lowe and Craig Hemmings, who'd obviously taken over after Trevor's passing. So something like that would have been fine. You know, it, as I say, even if it's just Hallett, a four-sentence statement saying we need you more than I've needed you since I've been in the club. It didn't happen. Look, that's all in the past. I know we're here to reflect on the past at the moment, but I think once the clock strikes 10:30 or whenever it is we press this end stream button tonight, Aaron, it's got to be full focus on Rotherham, and I'm going to throw the first cliche of the evening in and the six cup finals that lay ahead.
I mean, if that was your short answer, I'd hate to hear your long one. James, you've been waiting patiently.
Wait, I'm on until the end as well. I've got plenty more to come.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.